You don't go to the movies, do you?
I don't go out that much.
Is there a reason why you're asking me this?
You know, maybe you had a recommendation.
Anthony Clare, 3650 Rathburn Road.
Hello?
Good afternoon.
Hey.
No, I'm calling to speak
Where
to...
Where are you calling from?
I'm sorry. I think there's been a misunderstanding.
Who is this?
Okay, I'll call back later.
Who is on the phone?
The same guy who called before. Same guy.
Are you lying to me?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the B-Movie Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Kautzer, and I teased this last week. So this week we have a special guest on the line, Marie O'Sullivan of Film Dispenser. She's come back, and she actually, we didn't collaborate on this, double feature. She actually did this one herself. We're looking at 2013's Enemy, and then we're going to be looking at 1966's Seconds, each respectively directed by Denis Villeneuve. I hope I get that right. I always mess up his last name. And Seconds is directed by John Frankenheimer. So the first movie that we're going to be talking about is Enemy. And what I'm going to go ahead and do right now is introduce back to the show, Marie. How are you doing today, Marie?
I'm doing well, thanks very much, and thank you for having me back.
Absolutely. It was a delight to have you on last time, and we've definitely gone in a completely different direction with Seconds and Enemy. So my first question to you is, why did you choose Enemy? And then we'll talk about Seconds on that episode, but why did you choose Enemy?
I chose for a number of reasons. One, I wanted an excuse to rewatch it. secondly, it's a film that intrigued me when I first saw it, and I was wondering if I would see different things in it when I was rewatching it. And also, it was the theme. I was trying to find two films that had kind of connected themes along the line. They were my top reasons, but the other always underlying reason is my boy Jake. I'm never going to pass up a chance to watch him. So, yeah, hello, Jake. Two Jakes.
Two
Even
Jakes.
Better.
Yes. So I have like a really weird, interesting, conflicted relationship with this film. When I initially saw it, the first time I saw it, I did not warm to it at all. Like a little history, like Denis Villeneuve's career. I've loved, obviously people know that I love The Arrival. The Arrival was like my favorite movie of last year. But his two, like this and Prisoners, his first two English films, I never warmed to. I liked his French Canadian work, which is really quite stark and amazing. And Sicario. I loved Sicario and Arrival. I just didn't like his first. It's not that I didn't like them. It's that Prisoners suffers from a collapse in the third act that I just don't see how you can finish that story. Like there's no way, like you constructed something that ultimately is set up for me to be disappointment in the third act. And then we'll talk about this one, but yeah, his French Canadian work specifically, Incendies.
That was the first, my introduction to him as a filmmaker. And I had no idea what I was walking into. I don't know if I streamed it or got it on DVD somewhere and just put it in one evening, watched it, and was completely blown away. I just sat there with my mouth open at the end, and because I'm not going to give away any spoilers. I think people should go watch it. But the point at which I realized what was going on was exactly the moment that the main character realized what was going on, and I felt that impact the same time she did, and it bowled me over. But I will say, I know a couple of people who dislike that way of doing things, and mm-hmm. they they don't take to him as a director for that reason, because it happens, you know, it's happened more than once, and they just don't like being slapped in the face at the end, I think. I think there's more subtlety to it than that. I agree with you with Prisoners to the extent that I think it's too long. And I think bits needed to be chopped out of that, definitely. And the story, as you say, is one that kind of tied itself up in a knot, and there was no way out by the end of it. Yeah. Arrival, I loved last year. Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. It with what I find interesting, and this is my third time watching Enemy, what I found very, very interesting was how it's the same thing that I criticized the film for, which is that it's a slight movie. Like, if you're not paying attention to it, it can feel slight. And the reason is it's the same reason that people get upset at, how do you pronounce, is it Indossi's?
Ascendis. Yeah.
Okay, you've got a great French. Do you speak French?
A little, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Ascendis. The ending, like, Enemy's ending is just as frustrating if you're not willing to accept that it's a metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's initially what happened with me, was like, I was like, nope. Rejected. But upon this last viewing, what I realized is it is a slight film, but I like how playful it is, and how it's meant to be dense. It's meant to not give you answers.
Is very true. Yeah.
In a very specific way, it's very Kafka-esque. Like something that I did not catch the last time. I was so, the last viewing that I saw, I was just so kind of upset about like it not being a traditional story, that I didn't meet it in halfway stylistically, which I like this last time I found a lot more interesting because it's kind of Kafka-esque in its delivery and what it's trying to say.
I didn't think about it like that. The story is quite minimal. There isn't much of a plot, if you will. Mm-hmm. But the examination of how people's minds deal with that, those kinds of situations. I'm treading carefully because we haven't announced spoilers yet. So mm-hmm. There is not a lot there. But if you're sitting down wanting a straightforward narrative plot, you'll be disappointed with this. You do have to set aside everything and concentrate. And even then, first time around, I saw it in the cinema and was giving it full concentration and still didn't get as much from it as I did this last time. So I think it definitely warrants extra viewings.
No, absolutely. We actually should just say spoilers at this point, because there's really not a way to talk about this movie without divulging slight spoilers. We won't ruin the ending. We won't ruin the last 10 or 15 minutes, but this is slight spoilers because we have to get into the plot. It's interesting the way that the film begins in such a way. It's like about routine and how and how his routine is it's almost like there's this specific routine he has in his for specific reasons, and with the introduction of the movie is where everything starts to fall apart and melt for him.
Yeah, I agree, and it's a really strange start to it, because actually what it's about, what happens and what it's about are two separate things, I think. Mm-hmm. And so you start watching it, and I think there are clues even in the very beginning, but of course you don't know they're clues because you're just waiting for the story to start.
Yes.
And yeah, so there's a real atmosphere about it, and the what you hear is the disembodied voice of his mother expressing concern for him, mm-hmm. and that should immediately, you know, you think, ah, that's really strange. After the images I've just seen, what does that mean? How does that tie in with the images I've just seen? So it is a interesting opening as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, Without ruining things like too much, like to me, mm-hmm. like this last viewing kind of made it, to me at least, I was so focused on, the thing that made me focus, like the thing that I zeroed in on when I initially viewed this movie, the couple of things that I kind of really zeroed in on, which was the wrong things to zero in on, at least to me, was this. The literalness of the story, mm-hmm. the fact that he has this doppelganger,
yeah,
and they have these, like, you know, they have these specific coincidences, and his mother, mother's reluctance to tell him more. Yeah. I wasn't taking a bigger macro picture of the kind of, like, when somebody mentioned to me that this is kind of like a Lynchian film. Like, I was taken aback because I was like, I didn't see it. But now,
all right. Yeah.
After watching it, I realized this is kind of like Eraserhead in a lot of ways, because it's dealing with kind of certain specific fears. And for me, specific fears of, even though it's never like put on right on the dot, but the specific fears of like, of coming fatherhood.
Yeah, of commitment, of entrapment also, yes. Which is a theme that something I'd like to talk about a bit later on. But yeah, I think you're right. And I think the first time I watched it, I was the same as you. I spent a lot of time trying to figure out, how are these two people connected? You know, are they separated at birth? Is it some weird kind of surgical procedure? I don't know. All the things I could think of as to why these two people looked identical and had that connection, and that, you're right, that's where you focus on, I think, the first time that you watch it.
And it gets very upsetting because you're looking at the literalness of yeah. the plot, and the thing is that I've never read, and I think it probably would help if I had read any of the Jose Saramago novels or Saramango, mm-hmm. Or had any kind of interaction with it, because there's one missing piece that I didn't realize until just recently, is I just saw Blindness a couple of months ago. I didn't like mm-hmm. them. I didn't like the movie, but that movie is never supposed to be taken as an actual, like, much like this. This is like, it's supposed to be taken as a metaphor rather mm-hmm. than literal. It's supposed to be taken as like a microcosm, and it's kind of like similar to the, like, I've been approaching watching this movie the wrong way, because you're never really guided with how to watch movies unless you see something at like later than critics do, and critics like are blabbing about it, raving about it. Like, if you're not given some kind of guide, it can be kind of jarring and disconcerting, and you have to find your way. And I think that with Enemy, that was my journey. The first couple of times I saw it, I was so concentrated on plot. And that tells you what kind of viewer that I am, or what kind of movies we're constantly given, is this whole literal plots, where the more I think about Enemy, the more I realize, for me at least, it's metaphorical. Like, even even the name makes more sense to me now, Enemy. And it's like perceived enemies from the outside and perceived enemies on the inside.
On the inside, yeah, that's right. Well, what's really interesting is that this film made me do something that I rarely do, and that is, it made me go and read the book.
Oh, upon really?
Which it was based. Yeah, it did. And normally I don't like to do that, because I feel like, especially with something like this, and you know what's happening, it spoils it. And if I do it the other way around, that's a different matter. But I read the book, and actually, it's called, the original translation of the book is called The Double, but this film came out about the same time as that. That one came out with Jesse Eisenberg.
And
that was called Double, I think, or something. And I don't know if that's why they changed the name. But I read the book, and the book is fascinating in a different way, in that it is very much stream of consciousness kind of thing. But also there is very little differentiation between who is saying what. So you're reading there aren't paragraphs, it's just text. And you read it, and you almost have to read it out loud or to yourself in order to work out who stops speaking and who starts speaking and where things are, which when you think about it is really interesting, because the dialogue then just all merges into one. So a dialogue between two people, you have to work really hard to work out which of the characters is saying it, which I think is really interesting given what happens. And the other thing about the book is that the spider metaphor is not present at all. That's a Denis Villeneuve edition.
Okay.
So I don't know if
That is very interesting, because like the spider metaphor is something that I'm still not 100% sure of. I mean, that's just me being honest here, is that I'm not sure if it plays well, or it's either. Like, I know this sounds really weird, is it's either too really on the nose or it's too oblique. I can't figure out which it is, because I don't know what, like, it's around the entire movie, but it's done in so many different ways. Like, what I'm used to in film, and this is, I should say that I don't think that this is a bad film. It's just... I'm still trying to figure out what it all means to me specifically, because the way that he delivers this whole spider metaphor is completely like, it's not the usual. Like I keep on going back to Eraserhead, because it feels like a spiritual cousin to Eraserhead, in the way that like Lynch is dense, but he doesn't give answers, not because I think that Lynch thinks he's being very direct and honest with his visuals, even though they're so cryptic. I think Denis Villeneuve, with his imagery and his, you know, his metaphors, I think he's purposely being dense. I think he doesn't want to give exactly away what he is, but he has the whole, I think that he understands everything that he's doing. That spider metaphor makes complete sense to him.
Yeah, but he doesn't necessarily want or feel the need to explain it.
Yes.
Or
even give us like an entry point into it, because the only thing that you can really, like, the only thing that I've gleaned off of it is that it's tied to it's very much so tied to the feminine. The feminine nature in this film, which is really interesting, because there's so much about matriarchal things within society here that are just touched upon, and they're never really deeply examined, but there are certain, it almost feels like anxieties that are displayed between like not just with Adam but with Anthony, and like the dueling shifting points of views, but they're just looking at it from different perspectives. Like Adam's is like, his stuff with the matriarch is all about his mother, and Anthony's it's all about impending fatherhood and motherhood.
That's right. And what I tell you, the thing that's really interesting is the scene where there is a huge, very spindly spider that you see across the skyline, kind of walking really slowly. And that's, I don't know if it's based on, but it definitely reminded me of a sculpture by Louise Bourgeois, who is a French sculptor. And she did a lot with spiders. She had this fascination for them. But what's interesting is that one is called, it's called Maman, or Mother in English. Mm-hmm. So I think there was two sides to it. It was saying something about the spider as a metaphor for the mum, mm-hmm. for the motherhood, for the, you know. But also, there's the thing about being caught in a web, or also weaving a web of lies, either to yourself, or is it Macbeth who talks about the tangled web practicing to deceive? And I just, mm-hmm. I think the two things together, and also spiders are things that I don't like looking at, and I think a lot of people are repulsed by them, even if they're not afraid, and they always have this kind of looming darkness, kind of that you see one and it makes me think, oh, and I want to run away from it. And I think maybe Adam Anthony is trying to run away from, as you say, whatever's coming up for him that he's feeling trapped by. So, and I think it does, without getting inside Villeneuve's head, we can't really know for definite, but I'm sure he must be thinking along those lines.
Well, he also talks of, like, the thing that I noticed also about this last viewing was he very purposely has Anthony as a it's either a poli-sci teacher or a college professor or a government like a government and ethics professor, because he's very specifically, and I found it very interesting considering what all the political turmoil that we've been going through over the last 2 years, to watch this and to hear him, to hear Adam the professor, not Anthony the actor, specifically speak about control and controls in government, and governing bodies. Like, he doesn't, he like, and then he talks about the specific things that governments do to control. And if you notice, or govern, if you notice that there are certain things that he doesn't do in his life, that, like, it makes it very interesting when you take a look at the counterpoint of his life. Like, he talks about entertainment. He talks about, like, you know, what were the other things? I had some notes here, but it's very interesting to watch. And it's a very purposeful conversation. Like, I think that a lot of times, like, when you have a college professor in a movie, the things that they're talking about are just filler, are just things to show, oh yeah, he's a great professor. This one, he's a horrible professor. Like, he doesn't interact with he just kind of does this rat-a-tat-tat kind of, like, I'm just reading off of a script, but it's very purposeful the way that Denis Villeneuve, like, makes sure that in the editing rhythms that the control conversation comes up multiple times.
Yeah, it does. And he says, he doesn't have a – we don't see him watching TV in his apartment. He goes to the store to rent the DVD. That's fine. When he needs to go online to look something up, he clearly has to, was a bit like me this morning, trying to find a cable to connect to the internet. So it's not something that he regularly does.
No.
And he says he doesn't like movies. And then so that's how they say, he was saying they take away all the fun and all the entertainment, the governments will do that. And then he says it's a pattern that repeats itself throughout history. And I thought that's interesting, because he's repeating himself. His pattern of daily life is repeating itself. And I wonder if we get to the end of the film, is he set to repeat another pattern again? That's open to interpretation, but you could say that as well.
Absolutely. Now, what is interesting to me, like, very specifically, this last viewing is the whole aspect of the matriarch, and specifically the three-headed Hydra that he's created, because each one is completely different. Like, you have Isabella Rossellini as Mother, who's everything. It was very lost on me the first time. Like, even though I love Lynch, even though I love Blue Velvet is one of my top, like, 20 movies of all time, it was completely lost on me that he cast Isabella Rossellini. Just completely.
You know, I did not even make that connection. That's incredible.
Yeah,
like, you're right.
Like, he cast Isabella Rossellini, but she is a very specific kind of mother. Like, mm-hmm. But then you also have, like, and then it's a triptych. You have the mother in at the top. It's a triptych, or it's a triangle. You have the mother at the top. You have the emotionless, like I hate using this word, but this, the emotionless whore figure in Melanie Laurent's Mary.
Who, yeah.
All she does, I mean, her whole sole purpose in this movie is, like, and you see it, it's very purposeful, the way that the repetition happens in the first couple of the first 20 minutes of the movie, where mm-hmm. she comes in, she goes into the bedroom, she takes off her clothes, they have sex, and then she leaves.
Yeah.
And that is her entire purpose. Like, and but then you have Helen, played by Sarah Gadon, who's like the unsullied, the virgin, even though she's pregnant. She's the sexless, like, you know, literally up until the end, she's the sexless mother, the almost like the hope that Anthony has. That Adam ends up having,
because
it's not, it's, even though they shift, like, what I find interesting is, and I wonder if you agree with me, is that even though they shift points of views, ultimately this is Adam's story.
Oh yes, I think it is definitely Adam's story. Definitely. I think Anthony is a portion of it, but it's not his story.
Yes, exactly. He's an appendage, if you will, or mm-hmm. like the mech, like a, I hate using this, I hate saying this because I hate when people, when films do this, but a character as a plot mechanism. But in here, when it's like, when it's 100% all theme, like when we're basically playing, we're not playing with character, we're not playing with plot, we're playing with theme in a big mm-hmm. way. Like, characters can become, and characters do become, basically chess pieces for a director to move around, which I find truly, truly interesting that this feels like a very, like, this time felt like it was like, this is like Denis Villeneuve's, like, paranoia. Like, this is his fears on screen. Like, I really do feel like this is like his eraser head in a very interesting way, because up until this point, and then I went back in his filmography just to see the work that he did. And I mean, I've seen, he's one of those guys that when you initially found his work before he came into Hollywood, you were like, this guy's going to be like, you know, he's going to be on the level of David Cronenberg because of how well of a, like, he just like comes out of left field. And you go, where did this guy come from? And then you go back and you go and you look and it's like, oh, he's French Canadian. That's so weird. And then you start to realize, like, something like Polytechnique, which is, have you seen that?
I haven't, no.
Oh, that is a brutal movie. Like, it's about this, they call it the Montreal Massacre of 1969. It was where mm-hmm. a man came into a college and massacred a bunch of feminists that were in a classroom. It's a very famous thing from Montreal. This guy uh-huh. was just a lunatic. Denis Villeneuve's film is about that. It's just a stark black and white movie that it's Elephant Before Elephant, if you've ever seen Elephant.
Oh gosh, it's a long time ago.
Yeah. So basically, it's very, very, it's almost Kubrickian in how cold and distant it is, but you kind of mm-hmm. need it with the subject matter. But mm-hmm. When I went back and I started I started looking at his filmography, it makes complete sense that at a certain point he would make Enemy, because so many of his films are about matriarchs and about mothers.
Mm-hmm.
Something that I didn't even realize was a theme until I started looking at his stuff. I mean, if you think about it, even though Prisoners is the one-off, but Sicario is about a female, a matriarch of sorts, Arrival, same thing.
Definitely, yeah.
Ndhase, I'm never going to get that name right. It is about the, is about, like, at its core, yeah, it's about a matriarch. Right. And yep. So Enemy makes complete sense that it's like this horror movie, or this like horror movie in the way that it's a metaphysical horror. It's like a nightmare for, yeah, like, you could almost see that I almost wonder if Villeneuve read this book and went, this is like my fears. I can make this into, I can make this into something, because it's very interesting because each of them are approached differently. Each of the women are approached differently, and they may be slight as characters, but they are, mm-hmm, extremely important to the movie as a whole, because if you take one out, it doesn't work.
No, that's right. And they have equal importance in different ways in Adam's life as well. So I think him going from one to the other is, it gives you an insight a little bit into what's happening with him without you even knowing what's happening to him.
Absolutely. And well, and the other thing is that Adam and Anthony are two halves of a whole. Like, they're the yin and yang of, mm-hmm, of a male's like super ego. It feels like you have Anthony who's this kind of alpha, and then you have Adam, who is this beta, this really like this kind of like, and they're like, when they meet, of course, it's like there's fascination there, but there's also just complete and utter like fear of one another. And like, I wonder, I have my theories about the hotel meeting. What are your theories about that hotel meeting?
Oh, well, the meeting is not, it didn't, in my mind, it didn't happen. Not physically.
Exactly. Like, that's my thought.
If they met physically, I don't think it would have played out like that. I think in order for that to fit into the rest of it, you have to assume that this is Adam coming to terms with Anthony's existence. I say existence in inverted commas. You can't see me doing that, but I am. Because he... There's a moment where they go through all the, well, you know, how are we connected questions. Mm-hmm. And then there's that moment where he backs off in, I would say, fear. And that's kind of the moment when the penny drops, mm-hmm, I think, for him as to what's happening. And then he has to go and figure out how he's going to deal with that.
Yes. I find it very curious. What I find curious is how, whenever Anthony is brought up, it's females as sexualization. You know, like there's a component of sexuality and a component of since we're talking about the Madonna whore complex, mm-hmm, there's a very, like, every time that Anthony is, it's not so much in frame, but when Adam is thinking about Anthony, there's a component of sexualization there, women sexualized. I mean, think about the hotel room, when he goes into the hotel room, anytime he dreams about Anthony, there's the huge component of sexualization with, like, the nude women walking around in high heels, spider woman. I mean, literally, like there's very on the nose imagery, like, you know, like the Black Widow. I mean, like the whole concept of a Black Widow and what that does. It is very interesting to me that it almost feels like this is the, like, you know, and it's, it almost, it doesn't ruin it, but it almost ruins it by discussing the whole, like, that whole theme of yin and yang, the beta versus the alpha, the sexual versus the I guess, the domesticated.
yeah, I kind of see that. I'm not sure that they are, though, as distinct opposites as yin and yang. I think there's a lot of leakage between them.
The two.
And almost, I would think, to the point where I think the reason that Anthony is so prevalent in Adam's thoughts is actually, if you think about it, it's due to Adam's, well, the way I view it, due to Adam's actual actions in real life, which we don't actually see.
Mm-hmm.
But the fallout from them is actually now what's happening, is this battle between Adam and Anthony. But it wasn't Anthony that did it. It was Adam.
Hmm.
If you see what I mean. I could.
Yes.
I'm trying to avoid spoilers. Or too deep spoilers. But if anybody is listening to this and has seen it, maybe they'll see what I'm getting at. Maybe they'll disagree completely.
No, that actually does make a lot of sense. Like that makes absolute sense. I think that we should leave it at here, because anything more is going to be giving away the ending, and the ending is so kind of, it's very interesting. I'm going to say this: after rewatching this, it makes complete sense to me that if Ridley Scott watched this rather than watching The Arrival, like Blade Runner, his choice as the director of Blade Runner sequel makes complete sense.
I have written down as I was watching it all of these views of the skylines and the fog and the mystery going on. I cannot wait for Blade Runner, and I've written that down. It's just, bring it on. It has to be in good hands. I feel like it's in good hands.
Yes, because he's made a very, like, what I wrote down was, like, he managed to make a movie that's both Nicholas Rogue and David Lynch influence, but never the two, like, never like a straight ripoff homage. It's his own thing, but he manages to be so kind of editorially dense and visually dense as those two directors, but with having his own spin on it. Like, everything, like, I never want to visit Montreal after seeing this movie. it looks like Krakow, Poland. It looks like the most depressing place to be.
Oh, I think it's Toronto. I'm not sure it's Montreal.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It is Toronto. Like, yeah. He moved to. You know what? And that's even weirder, because I've been to Toronto, and it's a lovely town. It's like the loveliest town in the world.
Yeah, I do think he manages to pick the parts of Toronto that do not look appealing and that bring this kind of. Yeah, the architecture is quite incredible that he's chosen for that. And the other thing that I'd want to add in here just before we finish is the colours. I don't know if that struck you. It's one of, apart from Zodiac, I think it's the yellowest film I've ever watched.
Yes.
The lighting, apart from, then you get the flashes of white, depending on, particularly Helen, the pregnant wife.
Yes.
She's always bathed in beautiful white light, and that apartment is everywhere else. It's just this sheen of yellow and almost grime that you just want. I just want to turn a light on or scrub at something to clean it up, because it's always things are hiding in the shadows. And that was part of the, you know, Blade Runner is going to be the light. I can imagine how the light's going to look. Oh, I'm just so excited about that.
No, you're absolutely right. It looks like ancient parchment. Like, it's literally looks like it's been filmed through ancient parchment. It's quite striking, especially if you have a Blu-ray or you decide to stream it from one of the services in HD. It's really kind of startling how visually radical he goes with that color, because it is seriously yellow. Like you said, it's got that burnt tobacco look that that I feel like Zodiac, like you put it right on the nose, Zodiac had. But Zodiac, it feels like, and you know what, in this movie, it kind of feels the same way, is that they're hearkening back to like 70s films. And 70s yeah. had that kind of burnt yellow, burnt orange feel to them. But mm-hmm. but yeah, it's definitely, this last time watching it, it definitely brought some more things. And it's definitely going to be a movie that I'm probably, like, I keep on going back to every couple of years, and I think that it's going to be, as Villeneuve's career flourishes, which it definitely is here, mm-hmm. and very interesting, because there's certain things that he's swung out, he's just completely failed at, which I kind of love that kind of career, where it's like, you're going to try for the fences, and if you don't succeed, that's okay, but if you do connect, it's going to be big returns. And that's exactly like everything like leading up to this, like it gets me very excited, like you said, for Blade Runner 2049, because I think that he can, like, with all the stuff, and especially this movie, like watching this movie now, I'm like, yeah, he can do this, and it'll be something completely different than Ridley Scott.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think then, with me inviting you to revisit this film, that I have persuaded you that it's better than you originally thought it was?
Oh definitely
you have a new appreciation for it, I hope.
Yes I do Well, and it's also, at the time that I saw it, I wasn't on the Jake Gyllenhaal train, and
how dare you, wash your mouth.
I think 2014 2014 was the year that became like me being on the Jake Gyllenhaal train, because that was like Nightcrawler, and then like the slow rollout. I mean, I've always liked certain things from him, Zodiac, Source Code, but I've never really connected like with him being a great, great actor until Nightcrawler. Mm-hmm. And then when Nightcrawler mm-hmm. hit, I was like, oh wow, yeah, this dude is something to watch. And
yeah.
So,
absolutely. For the record, Enemy was my favorite film of the year that it came out in the wow. UK.
Okay. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is absolutely. Really awesome. All right. So where can people find you?
On the internet. You can find me on Twitter and on Letterboxd. I am ReesiePie, ReesiePie.
Great. We'll be back next time with a discussion about John Frankenheimer's Seconds. So you'll just have to tune in for that. Talk to you guys soon.